Pull up a chair and join us at the table this week for another episode of Paper, Pencil, Dice, a tabletop role-playing podcast.
Welcome back to Paper, Pencil, Dice, everybody. Last time on Paper, Pencil, Dice, the group, newly named the Platypus Gang, met with Ralos the Necromancer, and they've entered into an alliance with him to enter into the fortifications, the fortress of the Dread Crowns, to try to steal the Scorpion Bloodstone along with some mysterious item that is also there in the same vault, supposedly, that Ralos wants. So the group has split up from Ralos. They have 24 hours. They've already used 6 of them. And before we get into today's episode, we're going to go around. Everyone's going to introduce their characters, and we're going to talk about what equipment everyone has. So that way we can kind of remind everyone what everyone's items are and what they do. So first of all, we're going to go ahead and start off with Tegan.
All right. My name's Chris. I'm the second Chris. I'll be playing Tegan, who is a gnome sorcerer. My list of items is I have a fireball necklace that I bought with a ton of platinum that we got that we probably weren't supposed to get. It has no D10 6. It had left charges left. It has 686 charges left and 566 charges left. I also have a horse statue, which allows us for 4.5 hours a day if all 4 of us use it. Or if for one day we can create horses and go riding around. And then I have a ring, greater ring of energy, plus 10 fire resistance.
A greater ring of fire energy resistance.
Thank you.
All right. And next we will jump over to Hup.
My name is Mark. I'm playing Hup Bottomsworth. I am a human rogue, and I have got a beautiful rapier, which is normal. The only magic item of note that I have is a skeleton key that allows allows me to unlock doors magically.
All right. Sounds good. And after Hup, we will come over to Jethal.
Hey, yeah, I'm Chris. I'm playing Jethal Zahn. I don't really have anything of note, per se. I didn't actually spend any of the money that we got, besides, I guess, getting supplies for scrolls and stuff. So I have a fair amount of scrolls that I've at least scribed at this point for use later. So, but that's pretty much it.
All right. And last, we have Aether.
So I'm Brian. I'm playing Aether. He is an elf fighter that has scale mail armor on plus 1. He wields a steel shield as well as a longsword that's inscribed with a plus 1 weapon potency rune. And he also wields a falchion, which he has a plus 2 a weapon potency rune inscribed into it. So
that's those weapon runes. I want to touch on that because that's one thing that is drastically different in Pathfinder 2nd and actually threw us off. But so can you go ahead and describe how the weapon potency runes for plus 1 and plus 2 on those two weapons work different than plus 1 weapons or plus 2 weapons worked in previous editions of Pathfinder?
Sure. In previous editions of Pathfinder, if you had a plus 1 to your weapon, it was just overall plus 1. You would get that to both your attack rolls and to your damage dice. However, in the Pathfinder 2nd ed, you have to choose which rune has which effect. So if you want attack bonuses, you want the weapon potency rune. If you want extra damage, that would be a striking rune. So they're now separated into two different effects, and certain weapons, I believe, can be inscribed with both.
All right. It's good to know. And this is one thing that I honestly forget. There's an upper limit to how many runes you can have on a single weapon, is there not?
Yes, there is. And I'm not entirely certain. I think it depends on the weapon.
Okay. Or possibly even the wielder's level, potentially.
Yeah.
We'll research that, and because that's that hasn't come up yet, but as soon as we figure out the answer, we will let you listeners know on that one. So diving into the episode today, so our group split up, and we had Jethal. I'm sorry. First of all, everyone is regrouping. We'll say back at the inn. About 6 hours later, you guys all reapproach. And first of all, Jethal's already there. He's working away at scribing his spells. And we'll say that you're down in sort of the main area. And the first person to return back is Aether, who comes in pretty quick after you guys met with Ralos. And we'll go ahead and cut to a scene with the two of you guys when Aether comes in with the plans of going to rest and meditate.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just looking at my scroll, scribing it. So,
do you guys converse at all, or do you just kind of nod at each other and go your separate ways?
I wouldn't notice him unless he said something.
Okay.
Back at the end, is the woman with the game playing the dice game that we were playing?
She generally has only been there in the evening, and it's still afternoon at this point. She might be there later this evening, but she's not there right now.
Okay. I'm not doing too much right now, other than just preparing myself for expected combat that's coming.
Okay.
I will probably, as part of my preparations, using my ancestral longevity, choose the thievery skill this time around for that.
That sounds good. And next in comes Tegan. He comes walking in. He recently had procured a scroll of disrupting weapons. So just so you're aware, disrupting weapons, the spell can be found on page 331. You were able to find a pretty good deal on it. But ultimately, is able to be cast on up to two weapons at one time. Both have to be within touch range to do so. So you'd have to either be able to touch the weapons being held by someone else or be wielded by you at the time that you're activated. It lasts for 1 minute, and it makes the weapons deal an additional 1d4 damage to undead.
Awesome, thank you. And I only got one scroll of that?
You only got one scroll of that.
Okay.
So use it wisely. It'll probably only last for a single combat.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So you come walking in, kind of proud of your find. And you find Jethal in the main hall working on scrolls. At this point in time, Aether's probably already gone up to his room to sort of meditate. Do you say anything to Jethal as you enter, or do you go on your own way?
I just say, hey, I think I'm going to crash before we go up. It sounds like we start early in the morning. It sounds like we can be in the, I'm hoping we can be in the maze by the time everything goes down. So I'm thinking it's probably about 9 p.m. now. So start off at about 5 in the morning and go down and say our password and get into the bar. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes, yes. And I like shoo him away with my hands. I'm busy.
All right. Make sure you tell the others when they come in.
Yes, yes, of course.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead. I don't know how alarms work in this world, but I'm going to set my alarm for 5 and I'll probably have to wake up the others.
It's just a chicken.
That conversation.
It's a chicken that sits by your bed.
Okay, I'll smack the chicken when time comes.
That's an entirely different thing if you're smacking a chicken while you're in bed. We'll come back to Tegan smacking his chicken later in the episode. Meanwhile, the last person to come in right pretty much at the end of the 6 hours with a box that is kind of falling apart, parts of a box that are glued to his face, is Hup, right as Jethal is finishing up with the last scroll.
Yep. So as he's kind of finishing up, I'm kind of, you know, as I come in, I kind of nod to him. He's kind of in a corner, right? I'm assuming, Jethal, right? You're kind of sitting in corners.
Yeah, I would be.
Yep. So yeah, I kind of give him that whole head nod thing, right? And I come in, I get a bottle. I stop at the bar, get a bottle of wine because, you know, it's still early, right? It's pretty early in the night.
Yeah, it's evening at this point. The lady who ran the drool game before, she seems to be here again.
Oh, really? Interesting. I might be interested in that a little bit more, but kind of give Jethal a little head nod thing and come over behind him and I kind of watch what he's doing a little bit. Little pieces of stone boxes keeps falling off my forehead onto his shoulder a little bit as he's working away, and I'm kind of doing the whole nod and maybe point a couple corrections that he needs to make on his scrolls there.
And I just look, give you an eye like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Absolutely, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
And that's never stopped you before.
Never stopped me. My confidence overrides his expertise. I go get an empty glass and bring it over for the Jethal and start pouring him some wine and just kind of hanging out and just chattering along about how my day was and going on to this whole arduous story about this box creation process that really ultimately didn't work, but I'm just chittering at him the entire time. Like critter chitter type of thing. More annoying than anything else.
Yes. Absolutely.
So about this time, Andrew comes walking in and he has a small crate of stuff with him. He walks in and he kind of looks around like is he at the right place? Because this is not, your guys are not at the drunk. And he looks around and goes, this is a nice place. Hey, guys.
I wave him over and tell him to kind of signal to a barmaid or whomever to bring an extra glass over.
They it's a pretty easy signal to read, so they bring one over. And he joins you and he kind of sets the crate. He goes, so before he departed, Rollis stopped by one more time and dropped off some stuff. He said this was old gear. An adventuring party he used to travel with had, and he had sitting around that he's not making use of, and he figured that you guys could make use of it. At the very least, it would help with the success of the mission. So, he kind of rifles through it and goes, he said, this one was for you, and he hands Hup a pair of boots.
Super. What kind of boots are they? Like leather or like, velour? Are they velour?
Velour.
Are they velour? No, they are made of soft, supple black leather, and they have gold buckles at the top. And they give you, these are boots of elven kind. For the listeners out there, these are in the core book, page 606. So you have, they automatically give you a base of a +1 bonus to your acrobatics checks. And then additionally, once per hour, you can activate them. And you can ignore difficult terrain. So you can treat difficult terrain as though it was normal.
Mm. Oh, no, like I could just like pretend it's not even there. Like totally shut it.
No, you don't like fall through the earth or anything like that. Okay, but
gotcha.
No, but you essentially, like, if it's like rubble on the ground, you can walk over it without moving at half your movement speed.
So it's not like the girls in high school that ignored me. It's actually something different.
And it's a single action to turn on the boots, and you can only use them once an hour.
Fair enough.
If later on you acquire a cloak of elven kind, that activation also will give you faster movement speed, but you have to have the two items combined to gain that effect.
Okay.
He then also pulls out a hat. This is a big sort of a floppy hat, like floppy wizard's hat.
Mm.
He hands this over to Jethal.
Okay. And what's this?
This is a hat of magic.
What's this? This is a hat.
It's a hat.
Thanks.
It's a big floppy hat to make you look like a dork.
Did he steal Saeed's hat?
That's what it was. I don't need help with that.
It does look a lot like Saeed's hat.
Mm.
Like how close to Saeed's hat?
And this can be found on page 611 of the core rulebook.
Is that 611?
611. And this is Hat of the Magi. I'm sorry, not Hat of Magi. Hat of the Magi or Magi, however you pronounce that. This gives you, while you wear it, it gives you a +1 bonus to Arcana checks and also allows you to cast the Prestidigitation cantrip as though it were an innate spell that you knew.
Okay.
And then he looks around and goes, so where are the others? I brought something for each of them as well.
Oh, I can deliver that to them.
Oh, crud. We're never getting those.
I believe they're upstairs. We can probably go grab them.
We can absolutely distribute them.
Hup, can you go upstairs and knock on their doors?
They seem like they're probably sleeping. They've been here a while. So why don't you just give it to us?
Hasn't been that long. Can you go up and knock on their doors?
No.
Come and knock on our doors.
Some players never change.
We've been waiting for you.
Probably the commotion, since Aether's still wide awake. He's just kind of more meditating than anything. He probably hears what's going on downstairs.
I don't know. It's pretty loud in the bar. It's probably, we're talking quietly.
I rolled a 19 on my perception. Do I hear it?
You absolutely hear it.
I think I'll come downstairs, see what all the commotion's about.
Okay. You walk toward the edge of the, because it's a two-story building, you walk to the edge of the balcony and look down, and you see Andro here talking to Jethal and Hup.
All right, I will motion to Andro and as a wave, and then I come down to talk to him and see what brings him here.
Do you notify Tegan as well? Or I guess Tegan...
I did a perception check too. I got a 17. Did I hear what was going on?
Yeah, you were probably actually sleeping at the time, so you hear a sound and you recognize that your friends are downstairs talking to someone, but you don't know who yet unless you choose to get up and go downstairs.
I choose to get up and go downstairs.
Okay, so the rest of you make it down the stairs.
All right. I go to Andro. Good friend, what brings you here?
Well, Ralos gave me, and he kind of gestures to the box now. It's a lot more empty than it was. He gave me some old items from his adventuring days, and he said to give them to you guys because he's not making use of them anymore, to help you out with the mission. And he said you're welcome to keep them.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I can bring them up later to you guys.
I'm sorry?
I could bring them up later to you guys if you so choose. You guys look tired.
I'm here right now. I think whatever Andro has for me, I'd be willing to take a look at.
So he pulls out a small, like a brooch almost, and hands it to you. You immediately recognize this as a weapon rune.
Okay.
And this is the shifting rune. It's in the core rule book on page 585 for the listener. This is a rune that with a single action, you can morph the form of your weapon into any other weapon that requires the same number of hands to wield and that you're proficient with. whatever runes are already on that weapon applied to the new weapon that's formed, and if it's made out of any special material, the new weapon is made out of the same material, regardless of, you know, whatever it was.
So rules question on this seems really cool. If I, for instance, shift my falchion, for instance, which is a two-handed weapon, into, I don't know, like a great axe of some sort, do I get the traits of that weapon?
Yes, it has the traits of the new weapon. It still has to maintain the same number of hands, so it's still a two-handed weapon. But yes, it would gain the traits of the new weapon. Any traits, however, from runes specifically would be carried over. So those don't change. The runes on the weapon remain the exact same. This just allows you to, as one action, change the weapon into something else.
Right. So like my falchion has got forceful and sweep, but like say something like a Gisarme, which has reach and trip. I would get reach and trip on that. Yeah. So,
additionally, since your falchion is a two-handed weapon, a bow is also a two-handed weapon.
Oh, that is interesting. That is actually kind of cool. So, I didn't even think in those regards.
It does not provide ammunition, so you carry like a quiver with arrows, but you would be able to do that as well. Oh, I'm sorry. I misheard that. Melee only.
Melee only. Well, I could turn it into a bow and then just hit somebody with the bow, can I?
You could absolutely. At that point, that would just be a quarterstaff. But yes.
All right. Fair enough.
And lastly, he hands actually what looks like a quarterstaff to Tegan.
So it's sweet.
This is a staff of healing. This is in the core rulebook, page 594 and 595. It's not a full size quarterstaff. It's like a one handed walking stick, so it's not actually usable as a melee weapon, or it's not effective as a melee weapon.
Okay.
So the way that staves work in Pathfinder 2nd Edition is you can charge them up, so to speak, by expending as many memorized spell slots as you have equal to whatever it can cast. And then you can then use those to cast the spells out of it within the next 24 hours. So generally, let's say it's the night before, or pretty much what you would probably do every day is you would expend any remaining spell slots that you have and put them into the slot, presumably, since you're a spontaneous caster.
Yep.
You can only expend spells that are what the staff can cast.
Okay.
But you expend those spells, you add charges to it, and then within 24 hours, you can then expend those charges out of the staff to cast the spells that the staff has. So the Staff of Healing has two effects. One is the spells. So as long as you have the Staff of Healing, you have the cantrip of Stabilize, which is usable an unlimited number of times.
Yep.
And then you also, the first level spell that it has is the Heal spell.
Okay.
And it's only heal as a first level spell. So that means you can't increase it up in levels.
Okay.
So you can't cast it as second level heal or third level heal. It's always first level heal when you're casting it out of the Staff of Healing.
Okay.
Additionally, though, anytime you're wielding the Staff of Healing, whether you're casting heal out of your own memory or you're casting it out of the staff, the effect of the heal spell is increased by +1. So whereas normally you do 1d8 or 1d8 +8 or 1d8 to a group, it's now 1d8 +1 or 1d8 +9 or so on and so forth.
And that's only when I use the spells inside the staff or when I'm casting it too?
So long as you're wielding the staff whenever you're casting the heal spell.
Okay.
No matter where the source of the heal spell is from.
Okay. Awesome. That's incredible. Thank you very much. I already had stabilization, so maybe between games, can we talk about changing the cantrip now that I've
got whenever you level up, there is actually a rule in Pathfinder that you can. So you cannot do that until the next time you level up.
Okay, that's fair.
But the next time you level up, then you will gain, or you can then swap spells in and out.
Awesome, perfect. Thank you.
And And he goes through and he goes, it's like, that's the last of the stuff. Oh, and there's this. And he goes, he didn't say who this one was for. But he pulls out this small flask.
Oh, I'll take that. And I grab it.
Okay. He goes, that I don't know what this one does.
Okay. I'll study it a little bit.
Okay. It turns water into poison.
Should drink it, find out.
Nah. I mean, what does it look like, I guess? It just looks like a flask.
It's like a hip flask.
Okay.
It's thin. Maybe just, you know, a couple inches in depth and about like 3 or 4 inches wide. Mm-hmm. And has a little screw top on top.
I would like to open it and smell it.
Okay. It smells like whiskey.
Okay.
Dibs.
Nope. And it's potent enough whiskey that by when you open it, pretty much the whole table gets a whiff of it.
I cap it and I'm like, okay, this will come in handy later.
It's our celebration celebration drink.
Can I detect magic on it?
Sure. Do you have the detect magic spell, don't you?
I do. Yep.
Yeah. It is magical.
Okay.
Detect magic. What's the magic spell that is it? Detect magic that identifies.
Like, I'd have like, to use identify
or it's not like that. But you can also just say detect magic and just choose to eliminate everything else that you know is magical, gotcha. And then you know that there is something magical that's everything but that thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would have done that as well to know. Yeah. I guess I don't know what all. I'm assuming everything that we got was magical at this point.
That is correct.
And I know that other people have other magic items.
And so, in essence, you can just, because of the fact that you could choose to ignore what you know is magical or what you assume is magical. I mean, it makes logical sense that you just say, I'm going to choose to not read everything but that thing. So you can tell me, is that thing magical? And I'm okay with Dungeon Master ruling that you can use detect magic to ask if one thing is magical.
Sure.
Okay. By eliminating everything else.
Sure.
It's a read magic, I think, that helps you identify, right?
Read magic allows you to read magic. There's a third one. Read magic allows you to like read a scroll.
Okay.
Automatically, because normally in order to read a scroll, you actually have to make a check.
Okay.
But you can use read magic to pass that check automatically.
Okay.
So Andrew kind of looks at you guys. So
I know that's magical. I know that's magical. I know that Jethal has it correct.
Correct.
Okay.
Spoken like a true rogue.
Watch out, Jethal. I had my crown plucked off of my head last time I played a game with Mark.
That's fair. We'll see.
Andrew kind of looks at you guys. So it's the night before the big day, I suppose. Do you guys do anything in preparation, or are you just kind of trying to take it as easy as you can before everything goes down?
I'll tell Andro, hey, stay a while and join us for some drinks and we can reminisce.
Certainly.
I'm going to pass because I know I've been up all day and I really want to get a lot of rest for tomorrow because I don't want to be fatigued.
Okay.
So do we have two rooms or do we have three rooms?
I seem to remember somebody got their own separate room.
I have my own separate
room. I think you guys have two rooms. Three of you are sharing one and Jethal has the other.
So
yes.
I don't actually recall though.
I think that's correct. Sure. I think we all go party back in my room.
Oh no, thanks. Maybe I'll go crash into Thaw's while y'all party in our room.
That's what you think.
Thanks a lot, Hup.
Jethal has a gnome infestation.
Yeah.
There's sprays you can get for that.
Just don't make us greasy.
Right.
Oh man. That's my specialty.
So I think we play a little dice. I think we have a little wine. I think we got to work the room a little bit.
You got to work the room.
So we'll fast forward a couple hours into the evening, and Andrew kind of starts sharing a story about, like, man, you should have seen the look on the guy's face when Aether was standing over him, sword pointed at his throat, after the guy, he swore he had us. But, and, like, Andrew takes a big sip of his drink. He goes, ain't nobody is better than Aether at swordplay.
Yeah, it's lucky you were there, Andrew, though. That distraction you gave him just gave me that just perfect opportunity. I was able to get that weapon away from him and toss that weapon off into the brush so that he didn't have it anymore.
So as you guys are talking, can we figure out... I mean, it seems like they had a casual relationship. Do we feel like they've got more than just a casual relationship? Like they've maybe adventured for a long time together, or they've done lots of stuff together?
Are you
together,
trying to figure out if they're a couple?
No. Not so much that. Is there more history to them than what they've led on to believe? Because it seems like it's pretty casual at this point. Like, they've just kind of known us each other peripherally. This seems maybe like they've got more history than not.
Okay. So I guess ask in game.
So how do you guys know each other? What's the background between you guys? You guys seem like you know each other better than you let on to earlier.
Well, many years ago, I had come to Nishtun guarding a caravan, looking to do some trade within Nishtun.
I was hired to steal from that very caravan at the same time.
Yeah, you tried. I ran into Andrew, you know. Dealing with this city has always been as difficult, and Andrew... luckily, is way smarter than he may look.
Yeah, we had some good times.
Indeed. Speaking of, have you had any word and seen if Marin, my old weapon master, has passed through here? I haven't seen him in a long time. He said he was going to go look for the rest of the wardens, and I haven't seen him.
You know, come to think of it, I haven't either, but I'll keep an eye out for him next time I hear from him.
Great. I still looking for him just like last time, and it's odd. They've kind of disappeared. I'm a little worried because it's been a few years.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if I hear about him, I'll see what I can ask around. If I hear from him, I'll let you know, definitely.
All right. Well, speaking of that last time, you still owe me the bet. Did you ever find that bottle of wine from Faeldrum?
I didn't.
You still owe me. You said you were going to find a bottle.
I didn't say when.
Then I will not say when. I will pay you the rest of the gold that I owe you.
He just kind of like points at you and gives you that sort of like, you know, the look of I know what you're pulling, but I'm good with it type thing.
All right.
So, Hup, you were rolling to see if they are how good of friends they are on that?
I was more just if I'm buying all this.
So you're based upon what you can tell from their conversation, the thing is these two are essentially started off as enemies. They eventually became friends as they just by mere chance and just kind of similar personalities started working together on other side, you know, odd jobs and whatnot, and just going around, you know, swords for hire. Their partnership seems pretty honest that they're old friends for the most part. I mean, the thing is you get the feeling, and there's multiple stories that are told throughout the evening. Some of the times they're on opposite sides and they're fighting against each other despite being old friends because they just happen to be hired by different people.
Sure.
But some of the times they're on the same side, and that's generally the way they prefer it.
Right. Okay, well, so as the evening winds down and the dice start to cool, and I end up picking the rest of the gold out of people's pockets, I'm going to head back up to the room.
All right.
Get ready
for the also retire.
We got a big day tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm. That we do. And he goes, and the last thing that Andrew says as you guys are going, he's like, you know, I've been thinking all night about where I last heard about Marin at. I think, if I recall correctly, she has a house, or at least some place where she used to kind of, her original place was up north in Mallet. And she might have gone back there after everything happened.
All right. I'll have to circle back there and see if she's come home. See if there's any word on the wardens. I haven't found much myself.
I mean, after everything that went down, we more or less disbanded, so.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, those that escaped, you know, I assumed, you know, might have found some sort of ground outside of Faeldrun. So,
quite possibly. So, all right. Well, friend, get some rest. Good luck in the morning, and hopefully we'll meet again for drinks after.
Take care, friend.
And that he takes the empty crate and heads out.
All right. I will retire to the room as well with my rune safely tucked in my pockets.
All right. During the night, while all that drinking fun, Hup kind of casually at some point put his hand gently on Jethal's thigh.
Oh, goodness.
And Jethal's not really sure why.
He's a good looking elf. He's a fine looking elf.
Perception check. Perception check.
I already rolled it. That's why I told him
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I figured.
Sorry, man. Your crown of flames is gone.
You're making references the listeners have no idea what you're talking about.
I also don't. So
another game, I had a crown and he stole it off my head. It really sucked.
Well, honestly, you have a wisdom of 6 in that game, so stealing things off your head is not that challenging.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
That and convincing you that you actually gave it to him wasn't that hard either.
That sucked.
Anyway, all right, back at it. So, do you do anything after that, Jethal, or do you just kind of roll with it?
I mean, I kind of push his hand off of my thigh. I'm like, what are you doing?
Just he end up in Jethal's room?
The wine is flowing.
No, they're still down.
This is downstairs.
This is downstairs when they were all drinking and before Jethal left up to go to his room.
Mm-hmm.
I just, might like a man that can write a scroll.
I mean, I don't have any reason to doubt him, so I'm not going to, you know, or any reason to suspect anything as of yet, so.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it's fine. We'll see what happens.
All right.
And with that, you each retire to your rooms, I presume?
Yeah.
Or one, just all to one room and everyone else to the other?
Right. Yeah, correct.
all right. So, dawn breaks. Somebody fix it.
Yep. Slap the chicken. Let's go.
Slap the chicken. Let's go. Okay. This is...
Oh. Anyway, Oh, that one got me. So, yeah, you guys wake up the next day and get going.
Okay, all right, so on the way, I'm going to let him know that, hey, after the fighting breaks out, if we hit any undead, Aether and Hup, make sure you point your weapons towards me so that I can do the disrupting weapon on them just before the fight in the undead.
I am on that. Like an alarm on a chicken, I am right there.
Like an alarm on a chicken.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Oh, we're going to... It's going to be an interesting episode.
Well, would it be a chicken? It would be like a rooster. I'm trying to think of another name for a rooster. I'm trying to think. I can't think of one right now.
Moving on.
So the next morning we should get to the trials, right?
Yeah, we got to get in first. We got to give him the password. Yep. Get down in there.
So it's about probably 8 in the morning or so. So you have roughly 5 hours to get into the trials from the inn that you're at.
Okay.
So where do you go?
We have 5 hours, you said?
5 hours.
No. We go straight there, Mark. We've got to get inside and get the trials started. We don't know if the trials are going to start right away once we enter.
Absolutely. I think we should get a nice little continental breakfast, a little...
No. Hup. We're going now, Hup. We're there.
No.
Breakfast happened between 5 in the morning and 8 in the morning is when breakfast happened.
No Loch and Smear? What are we talking about? What kind of place is this?
You got that special whiskey for afterwards.
There you go. We're good to go then. So I think we get there early, right? We want to get there early. We want to get there. Maybe I'm a little more bedraggled than some of my compadres here.
All right.
Yeah.
So we enter the bar and we go up to Mr. One Eye.
Yep. You go to the Fool and Mug, and this is, again, the largest tavern in the city of Nishtune, and you go up to Arthur the One-Eyed at the head of the bar, and he says, "What can I do you for?"
You know, I would really love a Bloody Mary and a dragon-flamed spiced mead this morning, good sir.
The Bloody Mary we could do, but unfortunately we're all sold out of the Dragon Flame Spiced Mead.
Is there like a cup of water I could have taken a drink out of and done like a whole spray thing? You know?
Sure.
Okay, great. What do you mean there's no Dragon Flamed Spiced Mead this morning?
I mean, we're fresh out. Sorry, sir. But maybe we might get some soon.
Do you have a time frame?
I don't. It's a pretty rare item.
Fair enough. Well, I can enjoy my enjoy my Bloody Mary.
Okay, as he's saying that, I'm going to look around the room and see if I notice anyone's heads perk up or anybody watching or anybody's like drawing their bows or anything.
I mean, there are a lot of people that suddenly have taken notice.
A spray take always does that when you spray water everywhere. It always does it.
Who has what we need to say?
That is the right thing to say. Exactly.
Yeah, there's a follow up too.
There's a follow up. I don't have it for some reason down.
Oh, there is a follow up.
Does anyone remember?
Oh, crap.
You gotta wink at him and you're like,
so I remember. So I'm gonna go up to the counter. And I'll go up to the good sir. I'm sorry, my friend is a little slow, but do you have a dragon flame spiced mead?
Well, while you're doing that, you happen to notice the Hup is right next to you, like winking at him furiously. but he looks at you again.
A seizure on one side of my face.
But as you're doing that, he goes, "Yeah, I told your friend here, we're fresh sold out of that."
Then a pretty Pretty Penny will find another home.
Well, if you want, I mean, I think we're sold out, but if you and your friends want to come with me to the back room, we can always check to see if there's any in stock.
All right. Would be appreciated. I think all my friends here would like to try that
Absolutely.
Drink. So at that point, like everyone who took notice that Hupp probably still thinks was because of his spit take, just kind of go back to what they were doing and stop paying attention.
And I totally have that written down in my notes, by the way. It's just not in the right spot.
I'm just imagining you just looking at this guy, just like winking repeatedly at it.
It's got to work. It's got to work eventually.
All right. So we go in the back and somehow we got to find these trials.
Yeah. So you go into the back and he walks in and, you know, you're in kind of the storeroom. You see casks and all these different things. And it's just shelves and casks and boxes. It looks like a storage room. And he goes up to one of the casks and he pulls out like a pendant off of his neck. He leaves it still, like the string still attached to his neck, but kind of leans it forward, puts it onto one of the into the middle of one of the casks. These are large barrels that are laying on their side facing, you know, with the lid facing forward. Puts it on the lid of the cask, grabs the sides while it's attached to that, and kind of rotates it about 90 degrees. Pulls his necklace back off of it, pushes on the cask, and kind of that small section of the cask wall opens up, and you see an entire area past there, and he just sort of holds out his hand and gestures for you to walk through.
Thank you. And I walk through.
Yep, I think we walk together as a group.
As you walk through, he looks at you, nods, and says, "Shadows hide you."
Shadow hide you. True.
There's an S on that one, dude.
So, awesome. The Platypus gang proceeds forward.
In platypus style. Yep.
In full platypus style.
Yep.
What do we see in here? Like, what is it? It's just, you said it's just like a big area, but
it's a large sort of central area. The thing is you see a series of hallways, most leading in various directions. As you walk through, there are hallways leading some back up to the surface area. And there's a much larger hallway you see among all this kind of nest of hallways goes down, and it's the widest of all the halls. You also see just foot traffic of people just walking back and forth and back and forth through the whole thing. People coming from other possible entries that are not the main entrance that you just went through, into this area and just walking through. Where do you guys choose to go?
Main hall. Let's go.
Okay. Yep.
You guys, is everyone going?
I think we should probably travel as a group. Yeah.
Yep. I'm sneaking along. I'm trying to be as sneaky and stealthy as possible.
Are you wearing pants?
No. No, that you just assume no always with me.
Okay.
I'm not even going to try to sneak in a hideout of thieves. I'm not even going to try.
So as you walk down this hallway, you also hear a couple of rogues that are having a jovial conversation, laughing and talking about it's kind of hard to make out from the distance, but they both kind of stop for a moment, glance over at you, kind of give you a little bit of the side eye, and then just shrug and go back to each other. And then they kind of just start laughing at each other, you know, at the fact that they tried to intimidate the new folks type thing.
So you said they were rogues? What do you
say? Look like rogues, at least. They're leather armor, daggers on their sides, hoods.
Can I send them a little thieves' cant action?
Sure. Go ahead and give me a thievery check to see how well you do at that. Actually, no, you don't even need to roll it. So what are you trying to send?
Mostly just, hey, I got a good joke for you guys if you're interested.
And they kind of send back in sort of hand signals. Yeah, go for it.
So I walk over to him and I tell him about these three clerics, right? There's these three clerics, and they were, there was a lawful good, a lawful neutral, and a lawful evil cleric, and they were deciding how to divide money up around the churches. And the lawful good said, I think we take a stick out and we draw a little circle and we throw the money up, and whatever lands inside the circle we keep, and whatever we what lands outside the circle we give to our patron. And the lawful neutral one says, well, I think we take a stick and we draw a circle in the ground and we throw all the money up, and whatever lands inside the circle we give to our patron, and whatever lands outside we keep to ourselves. And the lawful evil says, well, I think what we do is we take a stick and we draw a circle around the on the ground, we throw the money up, and whatever our patron wants, he keeps.
And they both chuckle at that, like, ah, ha, ha, ha.
That's a great joke. They only chuckle? Come on, they should laugh out loud for that.
So they look at each other, and one of them goes, oh, I got to get it. And the other one goes, okay, well, take care. And he looks back, he goes, I appreciate your humor. So are you guys new recruits?
Yes, we actually
Absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely.
He pulls back his hood. You can tell at this point, based upon his ears, he's a half-elf. And he goes, so, anything I can help you with?
Yo, we are really green. We kind of cut some corners getting in, and we're a little unsure of the whole process. You know, any help you can give us, that would be great.
What do you mean by the process?
You know, just the whole, we just kind of got in. A cousin of mine said we should come into the town and basically make a, you know, it's kind of embarrassing. We're still kind of trying to find our whole feet in this whole, you know, Dread Crown thing.
You're just looking for a mark to rob or something?
You know, we're just trying to make our way, right? Whatever we can do. We're enthusiastic. We really want to do a great job. We got potential, right? But we're a little less prepared than we probably should be.
Well, if you got potential, I mean, I got a mark that we've been keeping an eye on of a guy who he seems to have a lot of stuff. I think this guy may have been an adventurer, but he's on his own now. He works, or at least lives or hangs out a lot at this small place at the edge of town, way away from all the guard stations. I think it's called the Drunken Gnome.
Oh, I may have been in there once.
This guy, he's an orc. I think he's a pretty tough guy, but thing is, I think if, you know, there's four of you, I think if all of you ganged up on him at once, I'm pretty sure he has some premium gear that you might be able to steal from him, sell that stuff off. You could make it, you know, heck of a profit off of that one.
Yeah, those orcs are stupid people, aren't they? Ugh, they're the worst.
Yeah, absolutely. But
how do we who do we take the cut to, right? The guild gets a cut, right?
Guild gets a cut, yeah. But I mean, you could, there's a few people in town who might be able to move the stuff for you. I know we have a working agreement with this gnome guy in town, Chris, Sade, something like that. I don't know, but he's a guy. He'll give you money for whatever, and then he'll send over whatever, you know, he'll send some of the money our way, or he'll tell us at least so we can expect you to drop off the money with us.
That's if we cool. Once we have the money, where do we drop it? Where would we drop it off if we can't find this person you were talking about, the gnome?
Oh, we'll find you.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
Very little happens in this town without our knowledge.
So this orc guy's got a bunch of cash. The gnome guy gets a little bit of cut. He's our contact to let you know that you can get your cut, right?
Yeah, yeah. You fence it to him, and he'll get your cut to us. Or if you fence it with someone else, you let us know, we take our cut from you, and all is good.
That's
can we just
you don't give us our
randomly in the hallways, hey, come take your cut? Or just someone
else
report to?
Dude, find someone else who's superior to you, which at this point is everyone.
Okay. There's not an office or something we're supposed to go to deliver all this stuff.
Do I mean, we do have some higher ups here, but if you come to them saying, here's your cut, you're going to probably get cut. So.
Cool. We also heard about these trials or whatever. Can we watch one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You want to know about the trials? Yeah, there's so it kind of points down this large hallway. There's a sort of kind of slopes down even further underground. You can see off in the distance. If you go down that path, there's a large sort of building carved out of the stone down there. Go through the double doors. Go in there. Tell them you're new. You haven't been around here, and you wanna watch the Crown's Challenge, okay. And they can show you where to go from there.
Sweet, thank you. I'd like to watch one of those.
Yep, that'd be awesome. Got to watch some stuff. I think we
watch some stuff.
Watch some stuff. That's the vernacular, or as the kids say, the vernac.
What?
Oh.
Well, I mean, I got to get going. Like, I got some things I got to take care of too. But anything else I can help you with before I take off?
I'm cool.
Okay. Well, best of luck. Shadows hide you. Enjoy the trials.
Shadow hide you, buddy.
Thank you.
Why do y'all keep doing singular? It's plural. Anyway.
So, and as he walks away, like, another person walks into this area, just walks past you, and really you kind of notice him before he notices you, mostly because of his size. He's about 9.5 feet tall, has a cow-like face with large horns, no shirt, and he's just wearing kind of like a loincloth pants, and has a short tail. And he walks by, and just the ground shakes as he walks past. He's carrying a double-headed axe. So it's like a pole arm with an axe head at each end, and he just kind of walks past. And when you're kind of a little bit in his way, he just kind of goes, and like as a gesture to get out of my way type thing.
Like a Minotaur type dude?
He is a Minotaur, yes.
Cool. Hmm. Cool. Cool.
He just kind of like doesn't even give you the time of day or even a word. He just pretty much gives you a gesture to get out of his way.
I just kind of give him a whole head nod. Dude, what's up?
He kind of rolls his eyes and walks past you.
He's so cool. He's so cool.
That's how the platypuses roll, baby.
That's how the platypus roll. Huh?
Beaks up. All right, let's go to the things.
Okay. So as you go down to visit the trials, you make it to this large building. It's the pretty much you get down. It the road tapers off to a much deeper, kind of almost a 30-degree angle down as you're going down. And eventually, you get to these large double doors. The double doors are about probably 12 feet tall. They're not really all that ornate. They're just kind of just steel or iron doors with studs in them, large rings to as handles to pull on to open them. Beyond those, the rest of the building seems to be just carved out of the bedrock beneath the city. Just really is not. It's not super ornate, but it's also really kind of impressive, just more on the size than it is the inscriptions or anything else like that. But yeah, you go up in the doors. The Minotaur got there before, grabbed one of the handles and opened it like it was weightless almost.
Yeah,
he left it open. You guys can walk in right behind him.
Yep. I just gotta kind of grab the door, see is it really heavy or is it just really good hinges?
It's really heavy. Okay. I mean, they're good hinges. I mean, it's not like scraping on the ground when you open it. But at the same time, I mean, these doors, once you get them moving, you could probably, even someone of your strength could probably close it. But it would take you a good amount of effort just to get it started moving.
Sure. So he seems pretty strong.
Yeah.
Okay. So through the doors into the trials, right? Is this where the trials are?
This is where the trials are.
Cool. Yeah, we're supposed to be in the stadium watching.
No, you're supposed to be participating.
No, we're supposed to be watching.
Well, we believe that we had the premise that we were coming in to watch, but ultimately we're trying to participate, right?
Yeah, correct. I guess so.
Because that's that. If you get into the participation, you're going to have a lot less people around you when things go down.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair. Okay.
So this Minotaur guy, does he look like he's a participant?
No, he looks like he's here to watch.
Okay.
And he just kind of goes up. There's two areas. There's like a big sort of a archway to walk into in the front, and then there's stairs that go up off to the left. And there's labels around that say, you know, seating, and then there's this guy who is very flamboyant looking. I mean, he has a large wide brim hat and a big feather sticking out of it. And he goes, "Hello, you look new here."
"We are new here. How did you know?"
"Oh, I know a new face when I see one. But you have one of the prettiest faces I've seen in quite some time." And he kind of goes up to you and sort of like runs his fingers up the middle of your shirt. And he goes, "So, are you here to participate in the trials, or are you here only to watch?"
"You know, I'd try my hand a little participation." "What kind of participation are we talking about?"
"Well, if you're interested, I can sign you up right here. And then in you go. And you can begin. We actually have no participants today."
"Well,
so you would be first up."
"Surely."
When does the first trial would start? Like right now?"
"Well, I mean, you'd have 10, 15 minutes to prepare, but yeah."
"Okay. How long does the trial usually take?"
"Oh, it varies. I mean, you all look pretty smart and capable. I bet you could knock it out in 2 or 3 hours, tops." "Okay. I mean, we've had people stuck in there for days sometimes."
"I could do it in record time. Let's go."
"I knew I liked you."
"All right. And is the prize at the end everything we've heard about?"
And he like comes up to you, kind of like gets down on sit where he's kind of sits down on his own ankles, kind of where he's crouched down, bends his knees, and he kind of talks to you like you're a child. He goes, "Absolutely. It's a really pretty ball. It's red and it's got all these swirling colors and it's really, really pretty. I think that is red your favorite color?"
"Yes."
"Well, yes. Then you are going to love it. Are you going with this strapping gentleman here?" And he gestures at Hup.
"Yes, I think we're all going."
"Fantastic. Well, can I get your names?"
"Yeah, my name
is..." "We're the Platypus Gang."
"Yeah, the Platypus Gang. You get all of our names at once."
"All right. Platypus Gang it is. All right, well, come on in." And at that point, he gestures you in. Does anyone stay back?
Nope.
Okay. He gestures you in. You enter through the doors. And what awaits you in the trials, we'll find out about next episode. So, thank you, listeners, for tuning in again. We appreciate everyone's time. We appreciate everyone listening, sharing our Facebook post for this, leaving us a comment, leaving us a like. Let us know what you think of the episodes. I know we recently changed our recording style, so we're recording through direct microphones instead of all sitting around a table. Let us know if you like it better or worse. We're trying to change things up, make the episodes a little bit better for everybody. So if you can let us know how we're doing, we'd really appreciate it. Anyway, we'll catch you next time on Paper Pencil Dice.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Paper Pencil Dice. Come check us out on our website, paperpencildice.com, or come visit us on Facebook. Leave us any feedback or questions you might have. Join us next time to see where our heroes end up on Paper Pencil Dice.